Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Master Your Health Podcast. I'm your co-host, Chris Rocchio. And I want to start off really quick by giving you a heads up that we recorded this online through video chat via Squadcast. So keep that in mind, but we still think the quality is okay and the content is well worth it. And real quick, before we get into this episode, I wanted to read a review from one of our listeners. This is a 5-star review from Jay Barshop titled Authentic, Empowering, and Amazing. It's obvious that Chris and Amanda put extraordinary effort in covering topics and finding guests that are authentic and truly care about being a positive force in this world. The insights that they bring to bear are still mind-blowing every single time. No matter the subject, you're guaranteed to gain something from every episode. Can't recommend Master Your Health enough. Well, thank you, Jay. That's what we strive to do. And as a reminder, for the rest of our listeners, if you could please go to our page in the podcast app, submit a review, give us your feedback. We'd love to hear what you think. So as you may know, we partner with Organifi, and they have a new product out that we really love and we wanted to share with you. It's called Immunity. And Immunity is great because we like to start our day with it. I'm sure you've heard us say before that it's great to start your day off with about 20 ounces of water before you put anything else in your body. And so I like to add this to my first water in the day. It's packed with a bunch of beneficial vitamins and minerals. It has a digestive support blend, which is great because a large portion of our immune system resides in our digestive tract. But the driving factor of the product is its immunity blend, which has vitamin D, vitamin C, and a compound called mushroom beta-glucan, or MBG for short. And beta-glucans are amongst the main health-promoting components of mushrooms, and they've been shown to activate white blood cells and modulate immune function in humans. So they support immune health, T-cell production, you know, promotes upper respiratory health, contain ginger and turmeric, and is a low-sugar alternative to some of the other well-known products out there that you go to for your vitamin C boost. So we're really excited to add this to the list. It tastes great and it's really light and not overbearing. So that's why I like to do it in my first drink of the day. So please check that out. You can find that on our partner page at Organifi.com/masteryourhealth. And you can use the discount code MASTERS, that's plural with an S, for a discount on all those products. All right, so getting into today's episode, we're talking to Vani Hari. And she's an author and activist well known for taking on major food and beverage companies, some of them including Kraft, Kellogg's, Subway, Chipotle. And what she does is she finds out what ingredients and additives are added to different foods and beverages, and then searches those ingredients and additives in terms of what studies have been done and exposes their health effects on the human population. Many of them are not very well known to most people that are consuming these products. And one of the things I really like about this story is that she gave up an extremely lucrative career in finance to go after some of these companies and really make sure that there is integrity behind our food, and really just followed her passion and did something that was much more beneficial to the larger population. And we couldn't be more thankful to her for it. So without further ado, let's get into it. We really think you're going to enjoy this episode.
And I'd like to welcome to the show, Vani Hari.
Thank you so much, Amanda and Chris. It's so good to see you guys.
It's so good to see you. You're glowing. You're 7 months pregnant and you just came out with a new cookbook. You got a lot going on.
I do. It's been a very busy year and we have 10 new products actually in development at Truvani too. So it's been a little crazy. I have, you know, my next baby, which is the cookbook coming out, and then this baby in my belly. So it's going to be a wild fall and winter for me.
Well, we're very excited for you and we're glad, you know, you're living your healthy, beautiful lifestyle. You look amazing and you obviously have the energy to go with it, even though you're 7 months pregnant. I'm sure the ups and downs there. But so I kind of wanted to start off the show talking about obviously how you got started down this road. You really have skin in the game when it comes to speaking out against these food companies, really educating your audience on what ingredients are in these highly processed foods and what are some better choices. And I'm really just curious, what set you down this path? Why are you so passionate about it? Especially because you don't even eat some of this food, yet you're still so adamant about sharing the truth about these foods.
Absolutely. So, you know, when I was growing up, I grew up with two immigrant Indian parents. And when my dad went back to India to get married to my mom in an arranged marriage, he brought my mom back to the United States on their honeymoon and said, you know, we're going to live here for the rest of our lives. And if we're going to live here, we got to eat like Americans. And so the first thing he introduced my mom to was McDonald's hamburger. And if you know anything about Indian culture, they don't really eat beef. The cow is sacred. So this was really foreign to my mother, but she had kind of adopted this mentality to allow me and my brother, when we were born, to just eat whatever we wanted and to try to fit in, even though she was still cooking homemade Indian food for my dad and trying to carry the culture of her upbringing here in the United States. And so I had a very interesting childhood where I was growing up as one of the only Indian children in my community. And I was getting fed at home this amazing medicinal spiced Indian food made from scratch, homemade cooking, but I would just completely shun it and say, that just looks weird. I'd rather have what's in a box or a bag or in the freezer from the grocery store. And I grew up on the Salisbury steak and using the Fry Daddy to do mozzarella sticks and going over to my friend's house and eating all of the Little Debbie cakes and all of the crap food out there. And I mean, I remember in high school, you know, my breakfast was a Nutri-Grain bar that was dyed with artificial food dyes and all sorts of crap in it and a glass of lemonade. And so, you know, this is just how I grew up. And my parents were really trusting of the American food supply. They didn't understand what had been done to it. So I don't fault them for that. And to this day, my mom feels so bad about all the things we ate as children. She told me a story about how my dad put Coke in my brother's bottle to get him to drink milk because he wasn't gaining weight. Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. So Coca-Cola, not the drug, but yeah. And so she, I know she really feels bad about this. And I feel really bad about the fact that I wasn't eating her amazing, healthy vegetarian cooking growing up. And so we both have these things we're ashamed of. But as a result, I had so many health issues growing up. And I felt almost like dead for most of my life, like zombie-like. When I think about that time period in my life, the first 20 years of my life, and I think about how I felt and I look back at pictures, I remember that I just didn't feel comfortable in my own skin because I had eczema everywhere. I had asthma. I had trouble breathing. I would have awful allergies. I had stomach issues. My brain was always foggy, you know, and so I could never focus on things, even though, you know, I'd find things to focus on, like, because I was a debater in high school and I was ranked number one in state 3 years in a row. And I really love that. But I tell you, I could have been like number one in the world if I was eating right. But anyways, eventually I hit rock bottom when I entered the corporate world. And I was in this rat race lifestyle on this expense account. And again, outsourcing my food to the people around me and the choices that they were making, catering in breakfasts full of muffins and coffee with 10 sugars. And, you know, at lunch, we'd have big spreads of barbecue with banana pudding. And then at dinner, we'd have a big spread of Italian. And then we'd end it with tiramisu. And you're sitting there working these long hours, 12-hour days. And that food is so comforting. And you're sitting down all day at a desk in a cubicle. And so I just started to gain weight and then start to feel really, really bad emotionally about myself. And then ended up in the hospital with appendicitis. And it was at that moment that I just made a choice that I just don't want to feel this way anymore. I want to change my body. I want to change my life. And I think that happens with a lot of people. They have this kind of groundbreaking moment of, hey, you know, I don't want to feel this way anymore. But not everybody has that. And there's so many people right now that are walking around like I used to walk around, not knowing the power of food and what it can do to your body. And shortly thereafter, I started to educate myself about food. And I educated myself the old school way, because back then we didn't have Google full of information, especially in high school where I learned to debate when we had to look at all these research materials. And so I just went old fashioned to the library and checked out a big book on nutrition. The first one I checked out was by Gabriel Cousins. It was called Conscious Eating. And this book, in particular, just spoke to me because he talked about how the majority of foods on grocery store shelves were dead food. And that's exactly how I felt for most of my life. And so that just that using that analogy and now realizing and taking a look back at all of the things that I'd been eating, and then me being very inquisitive about the ingredients of the things that I was eating, I realized that the majority of food that I was eating was man-made in a laboratory. It wasn't real food. It wasn't coming from nature. And so I started to slowly make the shift to more natural foods, less processed foods, and eventually completely off processed foods, almost completely off processed foods, and using whole foods, organic food, as much as possible. And everything shifted. The weight came off. I went off 9 prescription drugs. I started to look like a completely different person. And everyone around me was like, "What are you doing? We want some of what you're having." And, you know, in Charlotte, where I grew up back then, we didn't have a Whole Foods. We had tiny little natural food stores. And so I had to scour these little stores and find new brands to buy and new food to buy and learn how to live a natural lifestyle just from scratch and with not a lot of resources other than the books that I was checking out. And I wasn't on social media yet. And I don't even know if social media existed back then. And so, you know, there wasn't this easily gained community of people to teach each other like there is now on the internet about how to live this lifestyle. And so I had to learn everything the hard way. And I think that is what made me who I am today. And it allowed me to share the information that I share today and give people the information on how to make their lives better through real food. And my friends and family had an intervention right before I started Food Babe. And they said, "Hey, we want to know your recipes. We want to know what you're doing. Can you start a blog? Can you get on social media?" That by that at that point, we had Facebook. And I'd never been on anything. And they said, "You haven't even seen our wedding pictures or anything, you know, because you haven't been on social media." And I was actually really nervous about going on social media because I thought I wanted a career in politics one day. And I said, "I don't want anyone knowing about any of my personal stuff because you know how dirty politics can get. And I'm not going on social media." And at that point, there was all these, you know, stories about people losing their jobs because they posted some party picture or something, you know. And so it's just like, you know, and my job at the time was very serious. I was working for C-level executives at the biggest banks in the world. And so I said, you know, this is not something I'm going to do. But they convinced me and they said, you know, that's how you're going to share your blog when you start it. And I was like, okay, all right, all right. And so I wanted to call it eathealthylivesforever.com. And my husband, who's the tech geek in the family, said that was a horrible name and found Food Babe. He found Food Babe for $10 on auction about 5 minutes later and was yelled out, "How about Food Babe?" from the other room. We were living in a 2-bedroom apartment at the time. And I was in the living room and I was like, okay, all right, yeah, Food Babe. All right, we'll teach people to become food babes. This is great. Because it wasn't about me being a food babe because I didn't feel like a food babe for most of my life. So we basically started foodbabe.com. I gave up television so that I would find time outside of work to write and share this information. And that was the best decision of my life because it allowed me to just become such a different person and a more open-minded person and a person who knows more about the world, I feel like, and not be subjected to so many different opinions about how I should feel. Right. Because I feel like the TV kind of programs you to do that. I guess that's why they call it programming. But mm-hmm. I was able to find the time to start this blog. And after a while, after sharing recipes and just sharing how I felt about certain ingredients and what ingredients I removed from my diet, I started to gain this little small knit community. And it maybe was like 100 people or something. It was like my mom, my few friends, and then, you know, some other people who cared about their health. And at that point is when I started to share about ways that I had been personally duped by things that I thought were healthy but weren't, or I would share experiences where I would ask for the list of ingredients in food and a company wouldn't give it to me. And two early experiences, one with an organic yogurt chain company where they were advertising organic yogurt, but instead were actually putting in blue dye and trans fats and corn syrup on top of their organic milk to make their different flavors. I found this out by, you know, investigating the chain. They wouldn't tell me on customer service. They wouldn't tell me when I called them, but I eventually convinced one of the guys at one of the stores to show me the powder they were putting in these frozen yogurt machines. And he showed me this big bag of blue powder in my favorite flavor, which was taro. And that just didn't make sense to me because I looked up taro and it wasn't that blue in nature. You know, it has a kind of a blue tint, but it's a like a fruit type root in Asia. It's delicious, but I couldn't believe it and found out he read the list of ingredients to me and I revealed that on the blog. And after the blog went viral, the CEO of this organic yogurt chain reached out to me and said he apologized, he took down the marketing, and he was going to make changes to the ingredients. And that was kind of my first taste of activism, like what writing and sharing your voice online could do for long-lasting change. And so I just kept doing that. I said, well, what else can we change? What else do I not like? And what else is making me mad at the moment? And everything had to do, you know, it's really funny because everyone's like, well, how did you pick your campaigns? How did you target Subway? Or how did you target Kraft? Or how did you get General Mills to change? Or the beer manufacturers? And we can go kind of through all of these different stories. I mean, they're really fun campaign stories about every single one of them was a personal vendetta, if you will, of something that happened to me or a friend of mine or a family member, or I grew up eating and was just so tired of this, the stigma around these different food chains that would try to tell us we were quote unquote eating fresh, but we weren't really eating fresh. And so the next chain I took on was Chipotle. And Chipotle at the time had this amazing marketing campaign. They came out with this videos of them using the farm, and you were like, wow, this is like healthy food. This is going to be great. You know, a fast food chain that I could trust. And they had this tagline, food with integrity. And I was like, yeah, this is great. But then when I called and asked for a list of ingredients in their food, they wouldn't give it to me. They wouldn't tell me what was in their tortillas for their burritos. They wouldn't tell me what was in their taco or in their meat or anything. They wouldn't tell me anything. So I was like, well, wait a minute. You're telling me your food's with integrity, but you're not being transparent about what's in it. That's not fair.
Yeah. Super sketch.
Yeah. I mean, I called, emailed, and called different local chains, different individual restaurants, and nobody would give it to me at all. So what I did was I said, you know what? I'm going to get in the car and I'm going to drive and I'm going to convince someone to show me the ingredients or show me something at one of these stores because they've got to have like a box or something, right? So that's what I did. I drove in my car, eventually convinced someone at a Chipotle to start reading the ingredients list on the back of the packages from the back of the restaurant. And
you are bold and we love it. We're here for it.
And so I shared that on my blog and actually compared it to Moe's, which is another popular taco chain, you know, Mexican food chain. And I compared it and I just said, you know, here's what you're eating when you're eating at these places. And I find the lack of transparency very alarming that they have this marketing, but they won't tell us what's in it. But this is actually what's in it. They've got a ton of GMOs, they're using hot, partially hydrogenated oils, they're using, you know, all of these additives and preservatives, and this isn't food with integrity, according to my definition. And shortly thereafter, someone started a petition on my behalf against Chipotle. The chief marketing officer for Chipotle called me, Chris Arnold, I think he still works there today, and calls me and apologizes and says, hey, Bonnie, we're going to publish the list of ingredients online soon, but we're working on cleaning them up and we're going to clean them up. And not only did they clean them up, but they removed every single GMO, something that no other Chipotle chain has ever done. I'm sorry, food chain has ever done, any fast food chain for that matter.
So Chipotle removed the GMOs. And
yeah, they removed all the GMOs from their food. You know, after this campaign, I still had a complaint with Chipotle because they still sell Coca-Cola products, which have GMOs. But I said, come on, there's so many soda companies out there that are not using GMOs and more real ingredients that you could choose from instead and just be the leader. And I'm still waiting for that. But Coca-Cola has its stronghold on just about everyone here in America and around the world. So I'm not holding my breath.
The soda hold on the market is pretty crazy, like Pepsi or Coke sponsoring so many sporting events. And it's like, it's crazy how like that really doesn't, in my mind, shouldn't go together, but it continues to be a thing. I don't know. And actually, what are some better sodas, just because we're on that subject too?
So there's this one brand, Mainz, and they're incredible. They have like a ginger ale and a root beer and are using really, you know, much cleaner ingredients. They're, you know, it's not something I would drink on a normal basis just because of the amount of sugar in these products. I personally love to have like a sparkling Mountain Valley Spring with some lemon, and that's how I get my carbonation fix. I actually stopped drinking Topo Chico because I used to love Topo Chico, but there was something intuitively telling me that it wasn't serving my body. And then I find out that they have the highest levels of PFAS, which is a very controversial chemical that's linked to low birth weight and fertility issues and cancer. And so I was like, okay, I'm not going to drink that water anymore. And actually, Coca-Cola bought Topo Chico as well. So it's just another reason not to buy it anymore. So I use Mountain Valley Spring for that. But then in terms of soda, other soda options, there's Fever Tree that makes kind of the mixers that are a little bit less bad for you, that you can use like the tonic waters and the ginger beer, etc. And then another brand called Q, I believe it's called, but they also make a little ginger ale and some other flavors that you can get. And some people like Zevia. I've never liked that. I don't know. I some of the intense sweeteners like stevia have always bothered me. I don't think those taste very good. So if I'm going to enjoy some kind of carbonated beverage that's a can or a bottled beverage, that's a more natural version, I'd just rather have the sugar.
Yeah.
We actually just tried out this one, Olipop. Was that what it
was? Olipop. Yeah. That was popular now.
I haven't tried that yet.
It has like this dissolved fiber in it. So it actually has more fiber in it than sugar, like regular cola flavor, root beer, all that kind of stuff. I liked it. I'm not a huge soda drinker anyway. Like I haven't drinking a real soda in like probably 15 years.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just tried it and I kind of like it. And so I don't know. It's, what did you think of it?
I like that one. I don't drink those things like every day, but I actually do like the taste of Zevia. There's like it's like a healthier version of cherry Coke, I think.
Yeah,
cherry Coke. I think that one tastes really good. But yeah, I agree with you too, in terms of also getting out of this habit of always going to the fake sweeteners when we want something sweet. I know you're a big proponent of that, of like, not even just when it comes to soda, just you want something sweet, you should probably eat an apple or have a banana or make a Truvani banana chocolate shake. So, you know, also just a reminder that it's normal to want some sweet things in your life. Mm-hmm. And there's so many great healthy options Mother Nature provided us with.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's actually one that you mentioned, Truvani shakes. Our protein powder is one of the, I think, it's so funny because there's so many options for fast food, right, out there, right? You can go through a drive-thru and go to McDonald's, or you can just literally mix protein powder with water and really feel like pretty satisfied until your next meal or whatever. And so you don't really have to rely on fast food. And I love smoothies for that reason too. It's the ultimate fast food. And I've always said that, like, there's no excuse for you going through the drive-thru. If you can make a smoothie, it takes less than 5 minutes, you know? And so anyways, yeah, I'm a big fan of that. But kind of going back to these campaigns, these were kind of my first tastes of activism. And this is what eventually convinced me to quit my job working with those big banks. And when I did, oh man, did my risk factor and my just courageous nature just increase, because I think I was really holding back because I was scared of, you know, obviously getting in the media or even putting my name on my blog. I mean, I hid behind this name Food Babe for a year and a half, never even had my photo on the top header until I eventually quit my job because I was so worried about, you know, separating the two lifestyles and the two lives that I was living. And finally, it just opened up all my energy to what I was meant to do in this life, which was to tell people the truth about food. And the first campaign I took on after I quit my job was to take on Kraft, because they were doing something that I felt was very unethical. They were selling their mac and cheese product without artificial food dyes in countries overseas. But here in the United States, they were still using artificial food dyes. And the reason they had taken them out overseas is because in some countries, they require a warning label that says may cause adverse effects on activity and attention in children. So Kraft, being a global company, knew that their product with artificial food dyes was harming children. And instead of removing the artificial food dyes across the line for every citizen in every country, they used the regulations of specific countries to their advantage, to their monetary advantage, because really these companies, unfortunately, their number one goal is just to make money. And so they had basically determined that, you know, because American FDA doesn't care about artificial food dyes, we're just going to continue to sell them in the United States. And I felt like that was extremely unethical and immoral and needed to change. And so I started a petition and it got over 350,000 signatures, took those petition signatures to Kraft headquarters, met with Kraft, and eventually they removed the artificial food dyes from Kraft mac and cheese.
That's amazing. I'm seriously so thankful for you. You don't even know. You paved the way for what we do, because now obviously what we do is somewhat controversial, but you were one of the first.
Yeah, you're the front line.
You're the front.
More reporters.
So we appreciate you for that. And that brings me to the next question, which is, there's obviously these different standards which you highlight between the US and the UK. You have like great posts on your page, or like the US and Europe. Why is there such a different standard? And what can we do to have similar standards to Europe?
Yeah, I mean, we have, you know, it's unfortunate because there's this underlying assumption that all of the food that has been approved for use to be put into grocery stores and sold at restaurants is somehow safety tested. And it's not the case. Actually, the FDA has never had the power to third-party test the majority of chemicals in our food. We have over 10,000 chemicals in our food. Over 3,000 of them have never actually ever been reviewed by the FDA. And even if they've been reviewed by the FDA, a lot of times the safety data that is presented to the FDA is actually created by the companies who use the chemicals or have created the chemicals that have a benefit of using these chemicals. And if you look at why these chemicals have been created over the last 50 years, the majority of them, I'd say 99% of them, have not been created to improve our nutrition or health or our bodies or make us live longer. They've actually been created to make the food companies more money by increasing shelf life, creating addictive flavors, allowing them to use a bunch of food-like substances and making them taste like real food and mimic food and create qualities of mimicking real food by using different emulsifiers and gums. And obviously the long list of preservatives that allow food to continue to be edible a year later. And so you know, you have all these reasons of why these chemicals exist, but the chemicals don't exist for our bodies. You know, they're not there to really help us get healthy. They're there to help get the pockets of the food industry healthy, right? With our money. And so we're in a situation where we have a government that doesn't regulate the food system like it does in other countries. Other countries take more precautions when it comes to chemicals, and they look at safety data, they look at third-party data before allowing a lot of these chemicals in our food. Europe is some of the strictest standards, UK as well. And unfortunately, these companies, these food companies are largely US-run companies. I would say the majority of them are. And they're, you know, they're getting away with selling a bunch of garbage to Americans and then selling safer, better products to people overseas. Another great example of this is McDonald's French fries. McDonald's French fries here have, I think, 11 ingredients. Overseas, it's 3. You know, and one of the ingredients here that they use is dimethyl polysiloxane, which is an ingredient in Silly Putty that can be preserved with formaldehyde, according to the FDA, and is very controversial. It's not something we should be eating. And they use it here, but they can make their same McDonald's French fries in the UK without this ingredient. And I demand the same. And I feel like this is really unethical behavior. It's hypocritical. And I think one of the other companies that I want to mention that is so important because this affects kids is Kellogg's. Kellogg's is one of the most evil companies that exist, in my opinion, because in 2015, they said that they would remove all artificial food dyes from their cereals and products. They said they were going to do it within 3 years. I wondered why it was going to take them 3 years to do it, because they were already selling those same products overseas without artificial food dyes. So I was like, okay, maybe they're waiting for their supply to dwindle down or whatever, because this stuff does stay on the shelf for a really long time. Okay. I'll give it to them, right? But no, they don't meet the commitment. They don't do it. They continue to sell Fruit Loops, etc., with artificial food dyes here in the United States today. It is 2020, and they have created a slew of new products that have artificial food dyes. Cereals that are directly targeting children, like Baby Shark cereal, that literally is one of the first songs many children start listening to these days. And they're starting to, again, this marketing campaign to grab a hold of kids very, very young, to get them to eat all of these artificially dyed processed food, sugar crap that is going to harm their health. And, you know, artificial food dyes affect your immune system. So when they're creating these products in the middle of a pandemic, you got to say, like, what the heck is going on? Can't you come up with something that is going to make us healthier as Americans, especially our children? And they've done that, and they've created unicorn cereals. They've created new waffles that are like unicorn and mermaid flavored waffles. And this is stuff that they're creating right now that's all artificially dyed. Again, targeting children, very small. You know, my daughter, when I was working on some of the graphics for just to tell people about what was happening at Kellogg's, she came over to my desk and runs over to me and sits in my lap and looks at my screen, and she sees the unicorn and mermaid waffle picture on my screen. And she goes, "Mommy, that looks yum." And she's 3 years old, you know? And I know, right? Well, then I took the opportunity at that moment to teach her about what I'm doing and why, you know, why they're on my screen, and how this isn't, you know, just because something looks cute doesn't mean it's healthy to eat. But she is learning a lot about food, and I look at her eyes and I look at her innocent little smile and her face, and I go, am I giving her too much information? I don't know. You know, I'm a first time mom. This is hard work, but I want her to know the truth about food. She's got such an opportunity to learn the truth that all the things I didn't know growing up, I hope to instill in her so that she can make really good choices when she is in a situation where I'm not there, that I can't help guide her, and she makes a good decision on her own.
So if Kellogg's was given this 3-year moratorium and the deadline was 2018, did they get the FDA to reverse the policy and to allow them to go, or is the FDA just not enforcing it?
So they were going to do this on their own accord, and they made the commitment to their stakeholders in their shareholder meeting, and then they didn't uphold it. No one's holding them accountable. I don't know what happened to their shareholders, if they just forgot about it or what. And so I actually went to their annual meeting this year in April and asked the question, where do you stand on this? And the CEO did not give a good response. He basically brushed it off and was like, you know, we're going to do our best we can. And doing the best we can doesn't mean creating new products with artificial food dyes, an ingredient that you said you were going to remove 5 years ago. And that's just unacceptable, especially given the situation we are in terms of our health in this country and the products we need to be creating for children. And as a mom now, it's very offensive.
Well, do you ever get the pushback or the counter argument when you say this stuff about removing some of these ingredients from the products? Some people make the counter argument. We're like, well, you're inherently going to make these products that are easy for low income families more expensive, and you're going to price them out of the market. Do you ever get that response back from some consumers? Because I know I get it on the Instagram feed, or, you know, just feedback in general whenever we're talking about making things more organic, and then everybody automatically thinks that that's going to increase their food budget.
Yeah, you know, I've never, let me think about this for a second. So when we took on Kraft, that was actually one of the arguments that I thought people were going to bring up. And when I looked at how much Kraft mac and cheese was being sold overseas, it was very comparable to what it was being sold at for here in the United States. So I knew that these companies can make it happen, and they're not going to increase the price of their products. Maybe they'll take a hit to make the change, and they're going to, you know, obviously going to have to make less money because the artificial food dyes made from petroleum are cheaper to create then a real food product. I don't think the companies themselves would ever pass down the increase in price to their customers. Actually, out of all the changes that have happened over the last 5 or 6 years, I haven't seen any food increases when these companies have changed, because the demand for these products increase, and so they benefit as well.
Wow, that's really interesting. I mean, I also want to ask to people, because I know some people might go like, well, some of these ingredients, there's this bad study, but there's a good study. And I'm like, if the UK and Europe can err on the side of caution, and these companies are doing it just because they're cheaper, like the ingredients, what do you think that means for your health? That this ingredient is cheaper, there's sketchiness around it, whether there's, you know, a couple good and bad studies. And they, like, other countries are being proactive and taking it out of their food system. Why would we not want to apply that policy, even if you're like, well, I don't know, it could be sketchy, it could not be sketchy?
Well, do you think that that's the result of, like, the revolving door between the FDA and, like, the C-suite and these big food manufacturing companies? Like, how you can have, say, the ex-lawyer CEO from Monsanto move over, and he's now a big wig in FDA. Do you think that plays a role, or what do you think is the blame for why you have this discrepancy?
Yeah, I mean, I think what has happened is we've allowed the food companies themselves to be unregulated, and they continue to be unregulated because of the money that they do pour in Washington. And so the only solution that we have as people is to take back control of our food. And, you know, in my first book, The Food Babe Way, was how to get off processed food. The second book, Feeding You Lies, was to show you all the lies the food industry has told us over the years that have hurt our health, and how to see through them the next time they try to do it. And the third book, The Food Babe Kitchen, is the tool set that everyone needs in their kitchen. I mean, the first 55 pages of this book is all about how to re-engineer your kitchen so you're setting yourself up for success. Everything from all the bad ingredients you got to get out of your pantry, a laundry list of all the no-no ingredients, how to stock your pantry with every good ingredient or good product. I take you through every single aisle of the grocery store. And then everything down from what you're cooking with to how you're storing your food, how you're reheating your food, all these different tips that I have seen people do the opposite of, or just not know when I go visit, like even my mom's house, I see something like, you know, this old Teflon pan that she's using. And I'm like, ah, no, that has no, you can't do that. If after it has a scratch, you can no longer use it. And she's like, but why? And I'm like, those are leaking cancerous chemicals in your food. And she's like, oh, okay, get me a new pan. I'm like, all right, I'll go get you a new pan. And so, I go through kind of all of the different swaps you have to make a healthy kitchen, and then give you 100+ recipes with a picture for each one. So you kind of know what it's supposed to look like. And of course, you know, we have a beautiful, you know, I had a beautiful food stylist and photography to make this book happen. But, you know, this is obviously not me taking snapshots of these recipes with my iPhone in my kitchen, but, you know, so don't get down on yourself. It doesn't look exactly like the photo, but it's so amazing to be able to create a book that I can give anybody, and they can take back control of their health, because cooking at home, making food with your own ingredients is the only way we're going to survive in this overprocessed world where government and the food industry are not looking after our health. And we have to take back control. And this is the only way, is to learn about what you're putting in your body. You need to know what are the ingredients you're eating, if they're nutritious, and where they come from. I call that the 3-question detox. Every time you sit down to eat, you ask yourself those 3 questions. What are the ingredients? Are these ingredients nutritious? And where do these ingredients come from? If you can answer those 3 questions about everything in every single meal, you not only will become a food expert, because if you don't know what you're eating, you're going to go hopefully go find out in Google or find a book or read about it, or ask the question to the company so that, you can find out what you're eating. But also, you're going to learn to become your own nutritionist, because if you start to ask yourself, is this nutritionist or is this nutritious, you're going to start to inquire about different ingredients that maybe you were eating on a daily basis that aren't nutritious, that are only there to improve the bottom line of the food industry, or only there to create addiction in food. And you learn about these chemicals. So we, as American citizens, as world citizens, as everyone that lives around the world, we have to know what we're eating. And if you don't know what you're eating, if you're sitting down mindlessly eating something, you don't know what's in it, you've got to stop. And that's really, these are the tools that I want to provide people, that they can easily get this information in one book and change their lives. And I can't tell you, you know, I wasn't allowed in the kitchen when I was little. You know, I had, again, 2 Indian parents that all they cared about was me learning math and science. They didn't want me to learn anything about household, you know, how to clean or how to make, you know, take out the dishes or do my laundry or anything like that. Although I did do my laundry in high school. I don't know why I learned that, but I did. I think my mom just got sick of doing it and was like, you're doing it now. You got an A in science. Go ahead, you know, do your laundry. But when I was little, my dad kept me far. I mean, he would just, anytime when I would be inquisitive about what's happening in the kitchen, he would like, get out of the kitchen. And he just did not want me in there. And so I didn't learn how to cook until I was in my late 20s, when I was on my own and going through this awakening of, hey, I want to take back control of my health, but oh my gosh, all this stuff I've been eating is processed. How am I going to make food from scratch? And so I started learning, you know, with the Food Network, I started binge watching, you know, some of my favorite cooks on there and start teaching and experimenting and started going to restaurants and asking how things were made and, you know, and figuring things out and obviously buying lots and lots of cookbooks. And there was never a cookbook like the one that I created today, which is Food Babe Kitchen, where it takes you through all the steps you need to do in order to create a real food kitchen and a real food environment. And it's I'm just so excited for everyone to have this. And I'm so excited that I was able to create it and teach myself how to cook throughout the years. And, you know, I'm not a trained chef. This is like real food, homey food. This is stuff that I'm cooking in my kitchen. It doesn't take me a long time. I cannot spend all day in the kitchen. There's actually recipes that didn't make it in this book because I didn't have the patience to see them through. Like, I really wanted a homemade organic croissant recipe in this book, but the thought of waiting 4 days for the dough to proof just during the time period of when I needed to get all these recipes finalized and tested and photographed and done, I was just like, this is just too much to add to my plate. I was just a big X on that. I was like, forget it. You know? So that didn't make it in this. That might make it in another cookbook at some point, but that is just, you know, not the type of recipes that are in this. This is stuff that you can make for your own family, and it can take a short amount of time and not a lot of ingredients. And that's what's beautiful about this. And I'm just so excited for everyone to have it.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
That's awesome. What are some of your favorite recipes in the book?
My absolute favorite recipes are the ones that my mom contributed. So she contributed a whole Indian meal, and she makes this Indian meal for us, like, I'd say at least once a week. And she just lives down the road here. So she either will bring it over or we'll go over there to eat. And it's these amazing flatbread kale prontas. And so what she does is she takes kale from her garden and mixes it with water in a blender and blends it really well, and then puts that into a whole wheat dough and then lets that ferment. And then she makes a flatbread with it on the stove and like rolls it out, and they are amazing. And my daughter just like dips it in grass-fed butter, and she just loves that. It's so good. But I'll usually eat it with the lentil dals that she makes. And there's a curried cauliflower dish along with another dessert recipe that she makes with carrots. It's mostly carrots in the dessert. And all of those recipes are in the book. And so just to have my mother's, like my favorite comfort food that my mother makes that is in the book that everyone can try with amazingly healthy ingredients and amazing spices and everything, it's just so cool because I just can't wait to see people make my mother's food like all over the world. It's just going to be the coolest thing ever.
Any photos of it?
Yeah, it'll be really neat to see that. I cannot wait. And then another recipe in here I love is just the homemade Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich and my homemade Doritos, because, you know, I feel like all the food that we grew up on, I don't want people to ever feel like they're deprived or they can't have something that tastes as good as what they really love. And there's just a different way to make things to make it taste, not only have better ingredients, but taste just the same. And so that's what I did. And I love those. There is a strawberry cake recipe in the back of the book that is in the dessert section. And this is actually the strawberry cake that I made for my daughter's 3rd birthday. She requested a strawberry cake. And when I was growing up, we would always have that like bright pink strawberry cake out of the Duncan Hines box with the strawberry cream cheese icing that you buy already pre-made. And I loved that cake because it was my best friend's favorite cake. And so every birthday that she had, she always had that cake. And so I said, you know what? I'm recreating this and I'm going to make it pink with real food ingredients, and I'm going to put it in this cookbook too. And so I did that for her 3rd birthday, and it ended up not being that hard. It took me like, it's probably one of the longer recipes because, you know, you got to make the icing and other things. But what I did was, I thought was a beautiful trick, is I took a bag of organic freeze-dried strawberries, one ingredient, just freeze-dried strawberries, and pulverized it and then mixed it in with the cream cheese and the powdered sugar to make the icing. And it made it such a beautiful bright pink. It was just gorgeous. And nobody would have ever, I mean, I'm sure like everyone thought it was artificial food dyes. Well, no, I mean, they probably did because they know who I am, but
Yeah, I was going to say, we know you, but if we didn't know you.
But if you didn't know me and you were just eating that cake, you wouldn't even know. But the beautiful thing about it is it added that strawberry flavor too. And so it was so fun to make and recreate. And so that was a really fun project and fun. And now I have
that on your Instagram feed. Yes, I remember seeing it. It looked so delicious. I was like, I want that cake. And I know it doesn't have like too much junk. I mean, you got the sugar because dessert is
icing
dessert.
Icing is the only controversial part, but you don't have to put that much on it to enjoy it, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll eat that icing.
If you give it the stamp of approval, then I think it's fine.
That's amazing. Well, where can we get this cookbook now?
Well, you can get it at anywhere books are sold, on Amazon. You can also go to foodbabekitchen.com. I'm actually sending everybody who orders a book the pantry list of everything in my kitchen. So you can take a look at that and see all the brands that I buy and everything, so that if you have questions about what you need to replace or what you need to do, you have all of that. Of course, all of that information is also in the book when you get it. And yeah, I'm just so excited for everyone to have it. It's a very personal look into my life too, just because it has so many personal photos of me and my husband and my daughter that I don't, you know, I don't share as often as some people. So that has always been just beautiful to see, even a picture of my mom and my daughter cooking. And it's so cool to see kind of this family cookbook come together and bring it out to the world.
That's awesome. I think both of our parents could use this.
I know. We should probably. You're right.
Because like I go, every time I go home to my parents' place, I go into their pantry and I go to everything they do with a black marker and I circle the ingredients list and I just leave it all out there for them to see. So they can just see that everything has either a red or a black circle around it, depending on what marker's available. But every time, and they're like, yeah, I know, I need to throw this stuff out and replace it. But then every time they go back to Costco and restock it because it's easy to do. So I know, I mean, I know at least a handful of people that could benefit from this book right off the bat. I think everybody does, honestly.
Well, thank you. And yeah, this is definitely a book that many parents need to read.
Yeah,
because of all the old school things that they learn to use. I mean, everything from, you know, microwaving food and saran wrap and all sorts of different techniques that, you know, I see the older generation kind of continue. And I'm like, no, and it makes me cringe. And I'm like, no. And then just, you know, it's so funny. Like, you know, I just think of like all the Tupperware in people's houses too. And I'm like, no, you need glass dishes, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So it's all about taking the small steps because, you know, you said something earlier in the podcast about you made changes and then people asked you about the changes you were making because they noticed the change in you. Right. And I comparing that with my approach, or at least what my first approach is when I first came into this world and my eyes were open, is that I wanted to tell everybody about it. And most people, when you're offering it and they don't want to hear it, they just dismiss it. But when you're doing something and you're setting an example and that becomes attractive, then people suddenly want to know what you're doing and what you're all about. It's just something that stuck with me because I know through trial and error, how that approach that you did, you just started doing it. You just went after it. You embraced the activism and let that speak for itself as opposed to trying to preach to everybody all the time, you know, especially like, for instance, like preaching to friends and family, the people the closest to you are the people that don't want to listen to you the most, or they want to listen to you the least is a better way to say, you know, and like they're the parents or grandparents, the more they have power over you in their minds, the less they want to hear you in general. So I think that if you're a listener and you have this same mentality, perhaps giving a book from a specialist like yourself is better than preaching to your loved ones all the time.
Yeah.
And having them dismiss you. So
I think that's a great tip, definitely. Yeah. Especially when it's like a cookbook, like
it's not just a cookbook.
It's not just a cookbook. You know, there's some hidden secrets in there, but it's also like, here, make some wonderful recipes and then they'll get all your tips and tricks in the beginning. They won't even know what hit them.
Yeah. We can kind of just like sideswipe them with information. They didn't even know it was
slide into their DMs basically.
You want to ask your question?
Yes. So we have one question we like to end the podcast on because it's the Master Your Health podcast. And if there's one area you would say listeners should master first when it comes to their health, their life, where should they start? Where should they start mastering you know, when it comes to their health or their overall lifestyle?
They have to know the ingredients of what they're eating.
Just start with whole foods.
It's short
all
and simple.
About ingredients.
I love it.
You heard it here first. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I can't wait to make some recipes from your new book.
Yeah, me too, Amanda and Chris. Thank you so much for being such amazing activists on your own right and helping so many people get healthy. I love following you guys, and you're such an inspiration to so many people, and we need more people like you in the world, so thank you.
Same to you.
Bye.
All right, bye.